Good evening, everyone. Thanks for making time to listen to my talk. And when this box of books arrived at the end of last year, it was the end of a 10-year journey, which at several points I wondered if I was going to make. It's 10 years in which I've been focused on some of the stuff that Chris Anderson was just talking about, the darker side of life. I've been researching, I've been doing clinical work, I've been looking at both mental and physical health complaints and how they push us to the edge of ourselves, how they make us tremble and sometimes break. And by trembling and breaking, I simply mean that being pushed to the edge of our ability to cope with what life throws at us. And it's quite a dark focus to have. And the book is very much about how we navigate those times. So although the title is a bit bleak, it is hopeful. And it wasn't just based on the stuff I saw in the clinic, it was or in my research. It was also in my family, my friends, my colleagues, and ultimately in myself. I saw loads of people I know struggle with mental and physical issues during that time. And so, to encapsulate some of the key messages of the book, I'm just going to focus on one story, one case, and we're going to call her Anne. If you could do the next slide, Jack, that would be great. So let's talk a bit about how I came to know Anne. So part of what I've been doing for the last 10 years is working in a transdiagnostic fatigue clinic. Now, transdiagnostic is simply a fancy way of saying that whatever the cause of your fatigue, you could come and see us, a bit like whatever the cause of your pain, you could go to a pain clinic. So we were seeing people who had post-cancer fatigue. Fatigue is a really common consequence of both cancer and its treatment. We were seeing people with liver disease, people with autoimmune conditions like Sjogren's syndrome. And over the course of 10 years, we saw hundreds of people. And we, being a multidisciplinary team, there is a consultant, a OT, an occupational therapist, that is, and a physiotherapist. And then there was me working as a clinical health psychologist. And part of what I learned in the 10 years of both working in the clinic and doing research into conditions as various as head and neck cancer, fear of falling in older adults, people with an altered relationship to food and eating, due to having long-term conditions, and also through observing my friends, my family, and myself, is that no two cases are the same. We are each a case of ourselves. In the same way that we're each unique individuals, we tremble and we break in our own unique way, which presented a bit of challenge writing a book about it. But there are some things in common that I wanted to share with you tonight. Two things in particular that I'm going to focus on in this talk is that it's the whole of us that gets pushed to the edge. It's the whole of us that trembles and breaks. It's not just our minds, it's not just our emotions, it's also our bodies. We are biological embodied creatures who are also embedded in a life world, and we're exquisitely sensitive as creatures to that life world we're embedded in, both emotionally and physically. So, yeah, it's as much physical as mental. So I'm going to talk a bit more about that when we focus in on Anne. And the second thing is, it's rarely one thing. It sometimes is. It's sometimes the big T trauma that pushes us to the edge. But more often than not, it's the accumulation of factors. So to bring that to life a bit, let's meet Anne. So no, back one slide, Jack. I just want to talk a bit more about who Anne is. So she's a late 30s probation officer, as she was when she came to see us. Highly respected in her field and very much liked by her colleagues. A very diligent professional. And when she came to see us, she was She was physically, mentally, and emotionally wiped out. She was mentally and physically fatigued. She had a lot of gastrointestinal symptoms. She had headaches. Her cardiovascular system was all over the place. She was fainting sometimes, couldn't get out of bed. She was anxious. She was really low. So her whole body and mind were really dysregulated, for want of a better way of putting it. So that's how she came to the clinic. Give you a little bit of the background. Single mother, bringing up her now adolescent son, most of that time on her own. The son's father was a drug user, and it was no particular surprise when they split up, though she was still very fond of him. She had help from her father through that time. He was one of the main sources of her support, and she always described herself as a stoic coper. All her life, she just got on with it until she couldn't, until she came to us in the clinic. And her question for me was, what's happened to me? And the short answer is the quote from The West Wing at the bottom of the screen: a meltdown isn't when one thing goes wrong, it's when 12 things go wrong. So let's go on to the next slide and have a look at what did go wrong for Anne. If you imagine this cube as the normal working space of you, and all of us, the complex system that is us, it has got a comfortable working space, which, when life is fairly okay, we're comfortably in the middle of. We can take a few knocks, but we can deal with it. But then stuff can happen that begins to push us to the edge of our comfortable working space. So the first thing that happened was that Anne's father had a fall. Now, I've worked with falls, and falls are one of those things that just one experience of can really alter the course of your life. And that's what happened to Anne's dad. He became very fearful, stayed indoors more, lost confidence, became quite low, became socially isolated. Nothing dramatic in a sense, but quite a substantial change. And he went from being someone Anne relied on to someone who now relied on Anne. Then, more perniciously, and maybe just something we can all relate to, Anne, I saw Anne during that era that we know as austerity, though it feels like it's never really ended. And she had a new boss who was a particularly zealous champion of austerity. So, in over the course of a year, Anne saw loads of support staff cut, literally decimated. The amount of people to help them do their job. She saw colleagues buckle under the strain of constant evaluations, constant performance reviews, colleagues going off on long-term sick, meaning there was more work for Anne to do. She was micromanaged, even though she was an incredibly capable autonomous practitioner. So the heat gradually got turned up at work. And then the straw that kind of broke the camel's back was her ex-partner and her son's father then died of a drug overdose. It was no surprise, but it was, of course, a shock. And because it was a complicated relationship, the grief was also complicated. So Anne could see, looking at all of that, when we went over the case history of this over a couple of sessions, it made more sense to her why emotionally she was pushed to the edge. But she wanted to know why her body was out of kilter as well. And that's where we come on to the next slide. And we used this model derived from compassion-focused therapy. Very simply, it says we've got three basic systems, three basic drives within us. We've got two that help us to be on, to help us do the kind of stuff that I'm doing now, to perform, to rise to challenges. That's the one on the left-hand side, the drive. When you're doing something that you like sports or a job that you're really enjoying, your hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, your HPA axis, is driving away in the background. It's the basic motor giving you the energy to do what you need to do. Your sympathetic nervous system is there to encouraging you on to do what you need to do. The other on drive is the one that Chris Anderson was referring to in the previous talk. It's the one that gets turned on by threat, by difficulty, by stress, by unpleasant challenge, and by unpleasant stuff going on for too long. Both of them were happening to Anne. And what Anne began to see was that over the last year, she had always been on. the amount of time that she actually had to have the third drive, the rest and recover and the revive drive, the off drive, that was what was had gradually slipped off her radar. That was something she had gradually become incapable of doing because she had no time to do it. Also, it was something that she had never really valued in the past. She had seen rest and recovery as something that maybe weaker people needed to do, and she had always just been able to get on with it. So that idea that she needed rest and recovery was also quite alien to her. So this began to help Anne understand that being on all the time is not just a cognitive and emotional thing, it's also a physiological thing. In my trade, we call it allostatic load. Allostasis is the work that you have to do to adjust to new challenge and to change. Allostatic load is what happens when that change and that challenge keep going, when you're in too high a gear for too long. And that affects not only your emotions and your thinking, it affects your immune system, your inflammatory system, your gastrointestinal system, your cardiovascular system. And that began to help Anne make sense of why it was her body that was also out of kilter and why she was so worn out. So moving on to the next slide, let's zoom out a bit from that, because one of the things that has become clear to me over the last 10 years of thinking about this, not only in the clinic, but in myself and my colleagues and friends, is I've seen a lot of us get worn out and worn down and burnt out. I've seen very good, conscientious people find it really, really difficult to cope. And in the book, I have this chapter called The Ambient Hum of Menace, a title I stole from a New Yorker headline. And in brief, it captures some of those things that keep those on drives on all the time for all of us. There is that whole austerity climate, which anyone in the public sector will be aware of. We're all trying to do more with less. And at the same time, we're in this continuous improvement, continuous performance review culture where we're always being audited and implicitly told we're never quite good enough. So we drive ourselves harder. Certainly, that's what was happening to Anne. That's what I've seen happening to colleagues. And we have that background hum of awful news. And at the same time, we're being told we're responsible for managing it. So when Anne went to her managers for help, she was sent for resilience training. And that was the turning point for Anne. Next slide, please, Jack. So it really helped Anne to be offered such an idiotic intervention for a systemic problem. She saw that she wasn't valued by the system she was part of. She was, as far as they were concerned, just a burnt out fuse. And so she began to query her own self-worth that she had always equated with productivity and just getting on with it. She began to see, and we began to question what she valued in those that she loved. And it wasn't productivity, it was stuff like kindness and gentleness. So that's what we began to work on. She began to invest what energy she had in stuff that actually gave her a sense of self-compassion, of joy, revival, recovery, and stuff that actually genuinely helped her turn off and to switch into that self-recovery. So, in essence, what she did was a reorientation. She rethought her values. Most of us only do that when we're in crisis, but part of the reason I wrote this book is so that both you and me can make that reevaluation before we hit the wall. Thanks for listening.